everybody. What's going on? Rob Sestrino back here to talk on the RHAP Rewind. Today, we're talking about not one but two episodes of The Real World. This is the true story of two seasons that we picked to watch on the RHAP Rewind, where people stopped being polite and started being real. And here with a person who is always real, my co-host, the great Chappelle.
Rob, I'm always real polite. Not just always real, but always real polite.
Real and polite or real polite?
Real polite. real polite.
You are always referring to women as ma'am.
Ma'am, yes. Mm-hmm. That is a true statement.
Example.
Whenever I see something egregious by these women, ma'am.
So yes.
Definitely, yeah, I'm very respectful in that way, yes.
I don't feel like you use a lot of sirs.
Oh, I do, sirs. Yes. Sir. Oh my gosh. You have to clutch your pearls when you say it. And it's sir. You know, so it's definitely in my wheelhouse. I'm a Southern gent. What can I say?
Yes. And I'm very excited to get the chance to talk on the RHAP Rewind today, of course. You know her from many appearances on post-show recaps, the Top Chef Rehap Up, and more. Please welcome in LaTanya Stark. LaTanya, how are you?
Hi, Rob. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah.
So, I'm doing great.
Happy to have you here with us to talk some of the real world. LaTanya, what's your relationship with the real world?
The real world, actually, to date myself, I'm like a fossil, just carbon date me. The real world started airing when I was pretty young.
Yeah.
So the season that we're going to talk about, actually, I was 13 when it was airing. And so it was really kind of the first of the reality shows that was out there. And the season that we're going to talk about, I wanted to discuss because, you know, seeing all of this as a kid, you know, for the first time, I saw the power of reality television and its ability to induce both empathy and to highlight social issues, like important social issues. And it was just a powerful tonic at that point in my life.
And let me set up here. So we're going to look at two episodes of The Real World, one from The Real World season 12. That would be The Real World Vegas. We're going to watch episode 3 of The Real World Las Vegas. And then we are going to go back to The Real World San Francisco, and we're watching season 3, episode 8. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just missed the Renap one by one episode.
Okay. I was so sad that it wasn't episode 7.
Okay, but we'll talk about both of those things. But Chappelle, do you think there's anybody that's listening that doesn't know what The Real World is? I feel like it's been a minute since there actually were episodes of The Real World.
Well, The Real World actually was airing on like Facebook and like some other ghetto platforms in the last few years. And so it's not been that long. Mm-hmm. But for the unfamiliar, The Real World is, you know, where it's like a social experiment where you put a bunch of strangers in a house and see what happens when they, you know, stop being polite and start being real. We know the spiel, right? But they just pick a different location, pick a group of people who probably have different views. And then they say, like, what happens when we make them go to work and live together and we film it all? And that's pretty much it. And this is like one of, if not the like most famous, you know, reality TV show format of all time. Like The Real World goes on for years and years and years. It starts in the 80s. Right.
I think it's probably 90? Like 91, I think.
Before my time. Mm-hmm. I'm such a fossil, though. So for me, this is something that has been around as long as I've been alive. Coincidentally, I was 13 when The Real World Las Vegas came out. So I think there is some synergy here. Yeah. Is where we talk about both of these seasons. But yeah, The Real World has given us tons of like iconic moments, cast members, just television tropes that you see repeated over and over again in reality TV. So it's very important that we do the rewind and we pay homage to one of the goats, and that is The Real World.
Yeah, it looks like 92 was the first season of The Real World, The Real World New York.
Yeah, and another good season. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the earlier seasons get lost, and just like because it's kind of, I won't say one note, but it's kind of formulaic. You know, they bring in like the same type of like diversity when it comes to like, oh, this person it might have conservative views versus this person might have liberal views, and they like there's not a lot of fighting in the earlier seasons, then they start to like say, oh, wait, drama sells. And so they start to poke and prod these people into more fights. And then by the time I turn 13, they're like, oh, no, let's just give them alcohol and put them in Las Vegas.
Yes.
And let's do a different type of social experiment. So I think today we're going to cover both of those.
And these seasons are on Paramount Plus. You can check them out. But it's odd that seasons 1, 2, 3, 4 are there. And then there's no seasons. Then there's season 12, which we talked about. And then no 13 and 14. And then it looks like they've got the rest of them. So I don't know what the issue is. Was it like a music licensing? I know that there's a lot of like pop music that ends up in the real world. But it's just weird that there's like a whole era where it's like, no, we don't have these episodes.
Yeah, that is really odd. I had forgotten about all of the pop music that was on the Real World. So much so that I took note of for season 12 what the songs were. And I had completely forgotten about that Shakira song.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Totally forgot about it.
Your clothes. There's an endless story.
Yes. Extraordinary rendition.
Go in, Shakira. Yes, Shakira. I think, Rob, I think very much what I said is probably why they picked the seasons that they did. Because like I said, the first five are kind of iconic. And then there's a lot where it was just like, it's fine, you know. Mm-hmm. And I do think justice for The Real World Paris, because I think that's my favorite season of The Real World. And it just missed the cut. But they come back when they have, you know, the fully formed real world that they want to see duplicated again and again and again and again in The Real World Las Vegas. So I think there's a reason why they skip those. It might not be licenses. It might just be like, who cares about season 7 through, you know, 11? Mm-hmm. I do. I strongly do. And I want I want it back. Give me that back.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about The Real World Las Vegas first. And I think that The Real World Las Vegas, I think, really like kicks off like a rebirth of the real world, because that it was, I was not watching the show at this time, but I think that even I heard about just the like debauchery of The Real World Las Vegas.
Yeah. It was a wild season that I completely forgot that I watched. So thank you for
listen. I will never forget. I will never forget.
This was formative for Chappelle.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. By this time, I was already watching a lot of trash TV because you know, when you're left at home alone and your parents are like going to work, like my mom's like, all right, just sit here and don't open the door for anybody. I'm like, okay, cool. And so it was a lot of me just kind of babysitting myself by watching television. And so I remember the thing that drew me to The Real World, because it wasn't like I was watching them all in real time, right? I was very young, but I think I got like a portable DVD player. Ooh, very fancy back then. And I was in middle school. I was very excited. My whole family knows I don't really watch movies. Like, I don't have the attention span for it. So my aunt thought she was going to buy me like a season of television on DVD. And she didn't. She bought me the DVD of the behind the scenes of The Real World Las Vegas. So I was like, I thought this was like the season. So I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to watch this and I'm just going to have a good time. And then I saw the behind the scenes stuff. I was like, oh my gosh, what are these people doing? Now I have to go get into the source material. You know, like now that I've seen how the sausage is made, let's see the rest of it. Okay. So that's what brought me to the season. And then from there I was hooked. I watched every season of The Real World up until I probably got, you know, probably out like, I guess once I was older than them, I stopped caring, right? But when I was younger, no, I was knee deep, and The Real World Las Vegas is a large part of that.
LaTanya, I don't know if this was true for you, but it certainly was for me, where it was like impossible to miss The Real World, because like even if you like weren't watching it, there would just be like some weekends like MTV is just gonna like air the entire season like nonstop over and over and over again.
Yeah, it was very impossible to miss. I was also like part of the MTV generation. So yeah. I was just very into all of the programming that they offered at the time, thinking that it was the coolest thing that had ever happened. But I remember those weekend binges, and they started running that like format of programming, just airing a season on the weekend. Like they were the first ones, I think, to do that, too. So that was also really cool.
Yeah. And that, not to, you know, turn this into like completely like old people talk, but I just remember where like the MTV programming for the weekend like was very important. Like I kind of feel like it's the spring break weekend. They're going to be like all like this person is like taking over for the whole weekend. And like I remember it being like a really big deal of like that, whatever like the theme was for the weekend. Like, all right, that's what I'm doing this weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And like the canned little like things that they would shoot with whoever would take over about like, oh, this episode was wild. We saw X, Y, and Z. I have no idea whether or not any of the people that took over actually watched the show or if they were just given something to say by production. But yeah, it was just honestly, in a word, iconic. You know, it was like almost must-see television, especially for me as a young, like a young lass. I think Chappelle, our 13-year-old selves would have gotten along.
Yeah, yeah. I was a raggedy 13-year-old. I was in for all the wrong reasons. And I do have some questions for Rob.
Yes.
Rob, when I was 13, this group of people is very much your peer group. Do you know any of these people?
Oh. You know what? So this is interesting because I feel like I've actually know a lot of this cast of The Real World, not extremely well. But when I first moved to Los Angeles, which was in 2004, that was like basically like all these people were then. I mean, their season in 2002, so they were all like on the like scene in Los Angeles, and I had met Alton and Irulan, that they were like doing stuff with like the Fishbowl at the same time that I was there. So they would be like in the office from time to time. They seemed like a really great couple, seemed like super friendly. And then I got to work with both Stephen Hill and Trishel when we worked on the film The Scorn.
Yes.
Stephen Hill was the leading man in the movie.
I believe Irulan was in that film as well. Like, look at you.
I think she had a small part. I mean, we tried to get like a bunch of like people in for like day player roles. But Stephen Hill was the lead. I really enjoyed my time with Stephen Hill, and Trishel also was a big part of the film. And you know, I have nothing but positive things to say about my time with Trishel.
Yeah, Trishel and actors in general. You just love them all. Rob, if you could explain to LaTanya what exactly The Scorn is, because she might be into this.
Tell me what The Scorn is.
LaTanya, one of the first projects that I ever got to work on when I moved to California, I worked for a production company that was that they had an idea of like, well, what if we took the people that were from reality TV shows, and then could we do entertainment projects with the people that are stars from reality TV because they're famous and maybe they have like some sort of like household recognition? Maybe like we could do something. And it turns out you can't. You can't do anything with them, but we tried. And I was one of the people that they like started working with. And then I was like doing so much work for their website that they said, okay, you have to come out and move to Los Angeles. And that's how I ended up moving across the country to work in at this company. And that's where I really got started doing podcasting, that they had me like hosting like interviews with a lot of different reality TV people. And so one of the things that we had long tried to do was to cast a movie with all reality stars. And we tried to do like a Project Greenlight-esque show. And
notoriously terrible reality TV show.
Yes. Yes.
Project Greenlight.
Yes. Well, that is, you know, that was bad, LaTanya. So we produced a show which was the making of a all reality TV star horror movie, and that horror movie is called The Scorned. And Stephen Hill is the lead actor in the movie. That, you know, opposite of, you know, other luminaries like Bachelor Bob Guinea.
Wow.
Yes. LaTanya's face.
Yes.
LaTanya's face. Yes.
Yes. Trishel, Jenna Lewis.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Ethan Zahn.
Sure. What is the plot of The Scorned?
Well, I don't want to give the whole thing away, LaTanya.
No, you don't have to. I'm not saying, like, reveal the killer.
Yeah,
I just
could
want
get
to
it
know.
For, like, I think $1.99 for the DVD on Amazon.
I'm totally going to watch The Scorned.
Sounds like a Renap episode.
You could skip it, LaTanya. Yeah. But It was the idea was that they felt like that, again, everything at this company was sort of like reverse engineered of like, all right, well, we know that horror genre, like if we like sort of like reverse engineer like The Ring, that's what's selling overseas. So we need to create a horror movie that's like similar. And it was about a ghost that kills people for being unfaithful.
Wow. That ghost would have like ate it up in Las Vegas during season 12.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Hill specifically.
Yeah.
Was Jacinda Barrett a part of it? Or was did she her season come later?
I don't think she was scored.
Yeah, she was not that I have not worked with her.
Because she's like one of the most like prolific actor.
We didn't have prolific actors.
Just recognizable people.
Yeah. Prolific actors like said we're not going to be in the reality TV star movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch The Scorned. I really, I've watched way worse horror movies.
That's what you think.
put it on the wheel.
No, I want to find out who The Scorned is.
Yes. That there were a lot of creative cooks in the kitchen about how the ultimate project came together. So
did you write the script?
Or how- I was one of the writers in on the script. So I wrote that, but all the parts that were not good.
This man is a multi-hyphenate. I'm telling you, like one of the biggest moguls that exists. Definitely the biggest one that I know.
Yep.
Same. Yeah. Big same.
So, yeah, but I did get to meet a lot of like the reality TV stars of the early 2000s being in Los Angeles at that time.
Yeah. Just all scorned.
Yeah, at some point or another. Yeah, they all are. But so I had really never watched The Real World Las Vegas, but I knew, some of these people from real life.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, hopefully,
and obviously, heard about the incidents that taking place in this episode that we're going to watch.
The incident.
Yeah.
Well, this is an iconic episode, and that's why I picked it. For people who are unfamiliar, you just call it the hot tub episode. But there's a lot going on in The Real World Las Vegas, so I definitely thought there was some merit to talk about it. And there are actually some crossover between this season and the season that we talked about before. So, yeah, I think that if you want to take us through this episode, we'll talk about the cast, talk about some of the shenanigans, and then get into some of the more serious talk with The Real World San Francisco.
Okay. The Real World Las Vegas, they put the Real World cast in like the penthouse suite of one of the Vegas hotels. Which hotel were they in?
They're in the Palms.
Palms.
They're in the Palms Casino. Yes. And I really wanted to go to this location so bad when I was younger. Yeah. It's the reason why I went to Las Vegas the first time. I was like, I have to go to the Palms because The Real World was shot there. And I think Celebrity Poker Showdown was shot there, too. So I had a list of things to do. OK, but this was the true story of what happens when you put seven strangers in a casino. It's a very different story, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The Real World suite, according to Wikipedia, you can still go there. You still can stay at the Real World suite. It's only $11,200 a night.
Oh, only.
Okay. I'll put up the GoFundMe.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to spend any time in the Real World suite.
I'm quite the opposite.
Actually, then, it could be where COVID originated.
It's a slow burn.
We don't know. You know, people are saying Chinese labs, but you don't know.
You don't know. How could you be so sure? Yeah.
Do you want to go through the cast here of The Real World Las Vegas?
Yeah, I don't think we have to get into a lot of the ins and outs of the cast too much, but we can definitely talk about everybody a little bit. In a normal rewind, I'm like, no, we got to talk about each of these people because they're iconic. But honestly, we talked about Trishelle before. You just gave us, the Steven rundown a little bit. But yeah, this is an iconic cast. I think the reason why The Real World Las Vegas stands out so much is because this particular group of people was perfect for this location at that time in their life. So you had Trishelle, who we've talked about before, Steven, who is kind of like the almost like the leading man in a way of the season because he's like the desirable white man for the white women and even the black women at different times in the season. And Steven is a married gentleman who has come to the real world despite being married to kind of have a good time. all of these people really are just trying to have fun. They they really came here to live their life as 23, 24, 25 year olds. So those are kind of like, I guess, the two stars of this particular episode. And then you throw in Bryn, who is the third star in many ways. And Bryn is from Portland. She's very much a party girl. And she's just here to have fun. She doesn't have any other, like, there's no depth to her at all in this episode. She is here to have a good time, and there's nothing y'all can do to stop her.
Yeah, she makes her intentions pretty clear about how if she wants someone, she's going to get them pretty much by any means necessary. Just kind of like the original pioneer of, of choosing a target and just like, you know, going for it. Doesn't care who's in the way, who's, you know, like at her side.
You know, this was such a big deal, like this particular season of The Real World in 2002. And I just am wondering, like, did this like pave the way for like a lot of the trash TV that's out there today? Like, LaTanya, could Bachelor in Paradise have happened without the events of The Real World Las Vegas?
Clearly, no. Now, now, this is my first season watching Bachelor in Paradise, which is just, there are no words, you know, there are no words for how ridiculous the show is. But yeah, I don't think that people would have been as comfortable airing anything to do with like sex and sexuality had it not been for The Real World kind of like opening that can first. So, for sure. Yeah, we would not have, you know, people arriving naked to paradise without this show. So, you know, thank you. Thank you, Real World.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that this is going to premiere, I think, the same year as The Bachelor. So this is going to be in the fall of 2002. Is when this is going to be airing. And so it's interesting that like this season ends up starting at the same time as you know, like modern reality TV is really starting to blossom. And it's like that how is The Real World going to compete with now, like, where Real World was really like people look at it as like one of the first US reality shows. Now, you know, that these other reality TV shows are like propping up all over the place. Like, how does The Real World stay competitive in the 21st century?
Sex?
Yeah.
Question mark.
Sex? The sex.
And you know, it's kind of weird that you say that about The Bachelor starting that season, because The Bachelor is very much a conservative show. They allude to a lot of sexual acts. They don't even call them sexual acts a lot of times. You go to the fantasy room and things of that nature. Right. But in The Real World Las Vegas, they're like, no, no, no. Sex can be had anytime, all the time. There are no doors on any of the rooms. Like, just do the things that you want to do. And these are airing at the exact same time. So you probably have a group of people that are like, you know what? This is a lot. Let me go watch The Bachelor. Let me go find true love, in quotation marks. But then you got the people who are like, and, like, comma, but, The Real World Las Vegas is on, and it's, I'm going to check that out too. So I'm pretty sure you did see some competition between these two factions of television shows.
I didn't know The Bachelor aired. It started airing in 2002. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Been a long time. It's way too, it's still happening. Is very much still happening, and now even more so because people want social media followings.
So The Bachelor premiered in March of 2002. So The Bachelor premiered about 6 months before The Real World Las Vegas. So should we set up any of the other players? You know, we mentioned Alton and Irulan just briefly in terms of me meeting them, but they're gonna fall in love in The Real World Las Vegas.
Yeah they do that, amongst other things. Irulan is in an open relationship, and so she very much like, hey, I'm down to have a good time as well. And Alton is recently dealing with a breakup between him and his like is childhood love. And so in this episode, we see some of the aftermath of that breakup and things that haven't quite ended with that as well. But yeah, they become like a very much a duo throughout the season. Other notable people in this episode, or kind of in this episode, would be Arissa Hill, who is she like
no relation to me, Stephen Hill.
No, I don't think so. But she definitely tried to make relations at some point. And then Frank as well. Frank, I can't even pronounce his last name. Rossler? Yeah, Frank. Yeah, Frank is here too. And so
that's the guy I know nothing about.
Right. And that's fine for this episode. Because you will learn, like, he's in the scenes very, like, shortly, like, it's brief, but he does make an impact in a way. And I do want to talk about that at some point. But that's the whole cast, you know? And for this particular episode, we are going to talk about primarily the trio of Trishelle, Bryn, and Steven. But we also have to talk about and get into some of the Alton stuff as well.
Okay.
I forgot how attractive Alton was, by the way. Like
that's a handsome man, Alton.
That was my first note. It was like, oh my goodness, I forgot how attractive this man is.
Yeah,
a puka shell necklace and you know,
just
and
all very the much my aesthetic at the time. And, like, I could not find you attractive if you didn't have that necklace.
Chevelle, a lot of these people also will go on to play in many seasons of the Real World Road Rules Challenge, which will get often started. Had it started yet?
Yeah. I think it already started by now because I think this entire cast at one point or another plays the Real World Road Rules Challenge, which is wild. Like every last one of them, at least, I think. I could be wrong about Bryn. But I'm pretty sure they all step foot on that cast at some point or another. And so, yeah, again, an iconic group. Look how they pop on television. You gotta cast them in as many things as you want, whether it's the Scorned or the Challenge.
Yeah.
But especially the Scorned.
Especially.
Yeah.
First and foremost.
Whoever you can get. Yeah. So, all right. So we will start off with Trishelle. In the previously on, we see a little bit about like how things have gotten a little crazy because Trishelle's on the phone with her brother-in-law. She's talking a lot on the phone with her family. And she's talking about everybody that's in the house. And she talks about how she ended up hooking up with one of the roommates. She's worried that her sister, Buffy, will be mad.
Buffy's gonna choke her. At least that's what she thinks.
Yeah.
Everybody's always concerned about what Buffy thinks. But when I frankly, before I make any decision, I ask myself, what would Buffy think?
But she'll always support you. She may not approve of what you do, LaTanya, but she'll always support you.
I mean, it's kind of like just what happens when you end up casting people who like are from like a small town or from the South, really, like they have relatives that are a lot more conservative in a lot of those like aspects. So they definitely judgment happening from Buffy. Buffy's a judger.
In 2002, I'm sure a lot of people were asking, what would Buffy do? I think the Vampire Slayer was very prominent at the time.
It's so many like great Buffies.
I know too. Rob, so this is the aftermath of this. You guys, this is episode 3. So this is the aftermath of like day 2. Trishelle has hooked up with Steven, and now she's like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm from a small town. We're very conservative in my town. I'm a family oriented town. Like, I don't know if like they're going to look at this on television and kind of see that I'm embarrassing them or making, you know, or shaming them in a way. So she's very concerned about what her family thinks. Like LaTanya said, it's a lot of judgment, but a lot of it we're seeing through Trishelle's eyes. Like, she's calling them knowing the judgment is coming. And I think that's the worst kind of judgment, when you already know before you pick up the phone that the other end is not going to be receptive to what you're talking about.
Well, we find out later on in the episode that Trishelle's dad was very much against her going on the show. She talks about how that when she told her dad she was going on the show, that he felt like that she was going to embarrass the family.
Yeah, I mean... he's not wrong, he's just an a-hole,
right? Like, is it her fault the family was embarrassed? No, but they were embarrassed. They were embarrassed nonetheless.
But also, it's like, calm down, your what, like 20 something daughter had sex.
Yeah, she's on her way to be a MTV legend.
Yeah,
let her live.
Enjoy the money, like, calm down.
Yeah.
Right,
come on, dad.
She's 22 at the time. Like, that's
like, what else are you going to do when you're 22? I mean, I never did it, but I know of others that did.
I've heard about it.
Yeah.
People read.
I've seen it in films.
Yeah. Same.
Tanya, we start to see Bryn's perspective on the whole situation, and she wants to corrupt Trishel.
Who doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
yeah, Bryn very much came in just being like, I don't understand why people are saying that they wouldn't hook up with me.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have to remedy that. We have to remedy the fact that you haven't had sex on television. So I don't know. There's always going to be that one friend or, you know, like one person in the group that wants to corrupt you. It's something that I've definitely dealt with in life.
Mm-hmm.
We probably all dealt with it at some point.
That's like me with Chappelle, that, you know, he was the nicest guy before I met him. I'm always like, come on, Chappelle. He's like, no, well, no, I can't.
Stop.
Come on, Chappelle, live a little.
I shan't. I think the word friend has been thrown around a couple times, and I don't know if Bryn actually fits that mold at this point in the season for Trishel, because I think she says corrupt, but like with an eyebrow raise. Like, it's not so much like, oh, let me bring you out of your shell and show you, like, you know, what these other wonders of the world are. It's kind of like, I see this thing is stressing you out. Wouldn't it be fun if I just kind of, you know, pushed you over the edge a little bit? Yeah. And so if you look at Bryn through that lens, this episode means a lot more, because it's not just like, oh, we're all having fun. It's like, no. Bryn has the devil horns on right now, and she's about to strike.
So this is, I think for a lot of people, the most scandalous season of The Real World to date. And I think that part of the reason is because living in the Vegas hotel, you know, they're basically like, their apartment is like attached to like the nightclub. It's a little bit like the Friends setup, but instead of like a coffee shop downstairs, that they have like a rave just going on where they can
casino.
Yeah, and just get unlimited alcohol. And so we're going to see a lot of partying on this season.
Yeah. When in doubt, throw tequila at it.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been my motto.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And one of the things I thought was interesting is that I feel like that we see, like, obviously we see them partying and drinking, and Trishel and Steven, they're going to, you know, be drinking, and then they're going to go up in the elevator, and they're going to go back to the apartment drunk. Trishel's going to appear to have some regret the next day. And we see Trishel sort of like wrestling with this issue of, you know, is this the real me? Or is this the alcohol? There's a little bit of like a Dr. Jekyll, Miss Hyde that goes on. And she seems like she's trying to sort out, like, which is the real me?
Yeah.
Jorge Nolas Dos is really the answer to that. I mean, a lot of people would say that alcohol lowers inhibitions, but also heightens who you are.
Yeah.
Deep down inside. So, you know, maybe she was just a freak and didn't know it yet. That's fine.
And that's okay. You know, okay. There's a moment where she asked the question too, like, is it just me or is it the alcohol? And Irulan very quickly says, baby, it's you.
Yeah.
baby girl, listen, ma'am, it's you.
Irulan, just a font of truth and wisdom in this season. Like, just telling people.
She's been there.
Yeah, just telling people like how it is. Just like, it's okay if you are like this. It's really just a matter of, can you accept and love yourself for that person that you are?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a big conflict in this season and throughout this episode for sure is that Trishel is going to go do the thing, and she's going to get drunk to do the things, and then the next day she's going to complain about it. And you can tell this is episode 3 and they're already sick of it. They're like, I don't know what I can do. And they're like, girl, if you want to do it, do it. If you like them, like them. If you don't like them, don't like them. Like, even Bryn at this point is like, Trishel says, you know, I don't even know if I like Steven like that. And she said, well,
he's goofy.
If you don't like him, stop thinking about him. Well, stop thinking about him then. Like, Bryn is like, we're over it. Stop it. You did the things. It's okay. No one died. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, that's probably another thing that's weighing on them. But Trishel cannot see that because she is so engulfed in this, you know, struggle she's having within herself.
Brynn has an issue with her roommates when she is has Steven and Trishelle in the room with her. She hates the sound of people making out. She doesn't mind being in the makeout.
I don't want to hear it.
She doesn't want to hear it.
I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, it's probably just like one of those things where the sound reminds you that you are not the one partaking mm-hmm. in that act. And so you just get a little bit jealous about it. Because I think if it had been up to Brynn, she would have like done that with everybody in the house. She was just like, I am down. People are not going to tell me that I can't have all the sex here. Mm-hmm. And so I think that for Brynn, it's more of an issue of like being left out that bothers her more so than the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she doesn't seem like something like sound would bother her at all. But here she is complaining about it. But I think, you know, she just wake up next to somebody and they're like smooching. And you're like, okay, gosh, get a room, but also not my room.
But not my room, yeah.
Unless I'm involved, right? So I think that's Brynn's real issue here.
All right, let's get to the Alton storyline, the B story in this episode. Alton, this is weird. He gets like a stuffed animal in the mail. Let's tell you, he gets like a care package, but and then also a phone call. Like, were these two things connected?
Yes.
Question mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I'm Chappelle.
I mean, so the thing is, the care package comes, and you know, in the day of our Lord 2021, you know, you send the package, you get the confirmation email, you get the text message, you get the tracking, all that other stuff. This was the dark ages, you guys. This is 2002. She sent it, and she hoped that it got there. And mm-hmm. so the phone call had to be made, like, hey, did you get that thing I sent you? And he's like, yeah, this stuffed animal?
Stuffed animal.
Mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, it's a children's toy. Speaking of children. Mm-hmm. I'm late, and so maybe we're gonna have one. Thank you for coming to my conversation. You know, it's like,
oh. Yeah. And then he, you know, on right on schedule, freaks the hell out. Mm-hmm. It's just like, love the act of making a child. Don't actually want the result to end in a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So it was. I mean, you can kind of see where he's coming from. Everybody's so young. In this house, like he's really young, and the idea that a stuffed animal heralds a phone call with the announcement of like, hey, I'm late. You don't want to hear I'm late unless it's like about, you know, getting not being at work on time.
Yeah. And even then.
Yeah.
And even then.
That's not great.
This was like a ghetto gender reveal, you know, like before it was like, hey, like he opened the box like it's a child?
Stuffed
yes!
Animal?
Yeah. Congratulations!
Yeah.
Congratulations!
It's a baby. I sent it overnight.
I want to make sure I'm understanding what's happening here, that she calls up, she has a missed period, and she's going to the doctor, but she won't take a pregnancy test?
She wants to be sure?
Yeah. Like, she wants to be, sometimes, I mean, I don't understand this, you would just mm-hmm. double up.
Yeah.
I think, but sometimes people just want to go get the blood test to be absolutely sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because then there's like no denying it. But because you can miss a period or even two and not be pregnant.
Sure,
but,
sure.
Yeah. Like for just the short term like mm-hmm. consolation,
yeah.
just go take a pregnancy test. They were in at that time just starting to be like available. Where you didn't have to ask for them behind the counter. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. out in the aisle. So just go get one.
Yeah.
You can get one for very cheap.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to see Trishelle and her dad talk about her dad's feelings. He doesn't want her to be there. And we also bring in that Trishelle has lost her mom also. And I think that that's definitely something that she is dealing with during this season of the show. We're going to hear from Trishelle's dad later on in the program, Chappelle.
Yeah, this is very disappointing, honestly, to see that, because she's saying, you know, like, my mom passed away and my dad was never really there for me, which is why she has such a strong connection to Buffy, obviously. But she just wants somebody to feel like, you know, they're proud of her and kind of give her guidance and nurturing. And her dad does not sound like that type, just based off of what we see on the show. And, you know, her castmates are, they recognize that too. They're saying, you know, like, she just wants somebody to be there for her. And her confidence has probably been affected by the loss of her mom and not having somebody to kind of just raise her through adolescence up to, you know, being a grown woman at this point. So, yeah, it's heartbreaking for me. I don't love this at all.
Yeah. Kind of a downer part of this episode. Okay, so Alton and Irulan are talking about this whole situation. And Irulan is a voice for Alton to talk about all this with. A sympathetic ear.
Yeah, just, you know, Irulan's like a great listener.
Yeah.
And this happens like many times during the show, but also just kind of like foreshadowing their eventual like coupledom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's him and Irulan, not Alyssa, right?
Yeah. So Irulan, at this point, they have not hooked up yet in the season, right. But eventually, Alton and Irulan are going to be like a power couple in reality TV history.
Yes. Yes. They're still together, right?
No.
No. I thought they were.
Rob.
I swear to God, I thought they were.
I sent you the tabloids.
You did not. You did not.
I did.
They seemed so happy when I used to see them.
They were happy when you saw them, but they're not anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Rob, keep up. Guys.
It's a reality TV show couple, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Alton famously has hooked up with another reality TV star, I believe on the last season of The Challenge. Him and Ysela became a couple. Now he has moved on. So Ysela from The Challenge and Alton from The Challenge are now a thing, or at least the last time I checked.
Okay.
Only dating women with unique names.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Love it.
Like Alton.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. Well, let's get back to the party here, where you know, Las Vegas, it's a party town.
It's a party town.
Party town. And the drinks are being served. And ultimately, we end up with a big party back at the suite. And Sonia, we have a lot of people in one very tiny bathtub.
Yeah, it's a hot tub.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. But it is very small. It really does seem like only one person is supposed to be in there at a time.
Yeah.
They had no concern for occupancy, suggestions. But yeah, things start to heat up, no pun intended, in the hot tub. And it's with Bryn, Steven, right? Or is it Frank? Mm-hmm.
No, it's Steven for sure.
Bryn's, it's Steven. Yeah.
It's
Frank. It's Frank Steven. Is he should have some courtesy and leave.
Frank is just, well, everybody on this season, because there are no doors, they just watch what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They're always going to like in the episode where they hear Steven and Trishel making out and just grab a thing of condoms and go,
mm-hmm.
Give it to them. And then Bryn just kind of lurks.
Yeah.
Outside of the curtain.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are all like being very voyeuristic on this season, which is mm-hmm. odd, but but Frank still kind of has a bee in his bonnet because he thought that he and Trishel were going to be the thing. And that is not what happened. In fact, Trishel and Steven went out of their way to like make out basically on top of him to let him know.
Literally on top of him, Rob. Like in the club, like, hey, by the way, let me lay on you to get to Steven. I know you like me a lot, but I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Steven was like, I know we're boys, but you're in the way. Not Frank move, but also like Frank, just make yourself softer because we're going to lean on you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're just going to like make out on your lap.
Yeah.
Which it foreshadows this lesson event that we're talking about right now.
And just like that had already happened.
Yeah. That's episode one, that's, Rob.
Okay.
Just being comfortable in groups of three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically. Frank's not the most comfortable. You can see it on his face here that he is hating, okay? He is sitting there and he is just brooding because in his mind, Me and Trishelle are both from small towns. Mm-hmm. We both are, come from the same values, blah, blah, blah. But now he's seeing like, oh my gosh, she's exciting and likes to do stuff that I don't think are like morally correct. How dare you? She's trash. What a whore.
She's trash. He called her trash.
He called her trash like a bunch of times. He called Stephen trash too. That's but he definitely true, called her
it's
trash.
It's worse when you call a woman trash.
Right. No, no, no. Listen.
She's not making
how dare you, Frank?
He's so upset because I don't even think it's like that she's not making out with him. It's that like, hey, she should not be making out like until we are ready, the two of us as a couple. Like,
yeah, it's like sex is something that should be experienced by two people with very deep feelings for each other. Mm-hmm. He's mm-hmm. like one of which, you know, when I was younger, I definitely believe like being raised in a Baptist household, like to, you're supposed to wait till marriage. And like, it's something that, you know, people, it, so it makes sense in the small towndom of his own little mind. He is not happy at all.
No. Lighten up, Frank.
Very upset.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another person who was looking on. Oh my gosh, I love this. Irulan has a camera, like the world's first camera, and she is like taking the most obnoxious photos of him and sitting directly next to her is Arissa drinking a Dr. Pepper. Like she's just entertained. Mm-hmm. She's not flinching at all. Like, well, I guess I'll just be here for this.
Yeah.
I love this.
No one leaves. That's the thing that makes it scandalous in my mind is just that, like, you know, it was just like a porn show for everybody else who was in the house. Mm-hmm. This is like, go away. What's wrong with you people?
Oh, no, this is a commute. This is a communal space.
Well, like, I think maybe because dang. There's a like production crew in there. It's like, well, if the crew is allowed to be in there, then I guess we should be allowed to be in there, too.
Like a boom mic in the way. Like, yes, like excuse me.
Yeah, there's like nine producers like standing there also. So it probably doesn't seem that out of place for, you know, Frank and Irulan to be around.
And none of the three are bothered. They are unbothered by and undeterred by all of these people mm-hmm. that are just here to watch them do this.
I mean, I also kind of feel like that Bryn, I feel like Stephen and Trishelle weren't paying that much attention to her either. And she was kind of just sitting there at one point is like, I think she probably could have left and nobody would have noticed also.
Mm-mm. Bryn is not the type to leave.
No, she's not leaving. She's not leaving.
Going anywhere.
But I don't know if they would have missed her.
Make out on my
on my lap.
Yes.
On my lap, please.
That's what I'm here for. On my lap.
Mm-hmm. On my lap. That's the hashtag for this episode.
Yeah, it's not on my lap. On your left. It's on my lap.
on my lap.
All right. The next day, there's some. Looking back in the rearview mirror, Trishelle asking, should I have done that?
Yeah. So here's where I have questions. Because we see Trishelle having like this mental breakdown about this like hot tub moment. But she's also talking about the moment where they move to the bedroom and it gets scandalous, right? Bryn is in the bed. Trishelle is in the bed. Steven's in the bed. Their covers are moving. Oh my gosh. Trishelle's saying like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I should have spoken up for myself. I wasn't comfortable with that. And I'm thinking, oh my God, that they were they like forcing her into some type of sexual escapade? And then Bryn said, I made out with Steven. I made out with Trishelle and then I left. I said, all right, hold on. Now wait. What happened? Yeah. Because if that's what happened, that's all that Trishelle, girl, ma'am, calm down.
Ma'am.
You were
calm down.
Calm mm-hmm. down.
Everything is going to be okay. It's not gonna affect the State of the Union.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
Like by 2002 we had survived Y2K, ma'am. We can do this.
Oh my God. Y2K.
I'm just saying, it's a different time. Yeah. But Trishelle's whole like thesis here is just like, you know, like I feel like I really just didn't control that moment. Like Steven got me acting different. I ain't never done nothing like this. Like I really need to start speaking up for myself in these moments. And she's venting this to us in the confessional, but she's also telling her castmates, and they are literally like, we don't care. Like, Bryn could not be less bothered. And when I tell you that is on purpose, this is like, this is warfare. Like I told you, she was jealous. She wanted to be inserted in this. And now, you know, when you're really annoyed by something, the worst thing someone could do is just downplay it. Like it's nothing. She's gaslighting her. Like, I feel like this was a problem. And Bryn's like, what problem? What happened? I don't remember. It was just a flash in the pan. And it was nothing. And she's like, it was a lot. It was like, was it?
Friend's like, oh, it's just a Tuesday. Calm down.
Right. Jeez, we're in Vegas. Like, what if we had done sex too? Like, what if that happened?
What if we had done sex?
Yeah, what if the sex had been done?
The sex.
Trisha? The sex.
The sex.
Well, Trishelle's going to call Buffy, and she tells Buffy, what would Buffy do?
I don't know why that statement is so funny.
Because it's true.
Buffy, I have some bad news. I hooked up with another one of the roommates.
Just can't stop myself.
Yeah. Are you mad?
Like Pringles.
And the fact that it's a woman that, you know, Trishelle is worried about there being judgment. Can you tell Dad also?
Yeah. But Buffy, please tell our father that I had a threesome. What? Mm-hmm. If my sister called me and was like, please tell Granny I had a threesome, I'd be like, no.
I'm not gonna tell Granny I know what a threesome is. Are you kidding me?
Seriously. Also, Granny probably intuited it in the dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's calling you like, girl, what happened?
Yeah, she'd have a threesome.
Was it another roommate? Was it another one? Yeah, this is a wild conversation because she goes to Buffy because Buffy's her parental figure and she's like, listen, I gotta let you know,
her parental figure was named Buffy.
I couldn't take them seriously. Yeah, mom or otherwise. Like, listen, Buffy, calm down. Yeah, seriously. But you know, she says, you know, I'm not upset. I'm just disappointed. I'm like, oh, she did the thing that parents do. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not angry. She's just sad about it.
But she'll always support her. Classic always. Buffy.
Yeah. Classic and Buffy.
And she will tell your dad for you just as you want.
Yeah. Speaking of dads, Alton, he will not be a dad.
Thank God.
Yeah. Because he was going to give up his his whole like real world experience. He's going to go back to California, I guess. Maybe he was trying to go to medical season. School. Maybe he would finish the season. Yeah.
He was trying to go to medical school.
Did he become a veterinarian?
No.
Hmm.
What? yes, he did, and he's one of the best veterinarians.
And he plays the violin, right?
In the greater west coast of he's a violinist as well. I don't know if he ever became a veterinarian, but I highly doubt it.
Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. Yeah. We'll never know.
Yeah,
we'll never know.
Okay, well, Alton, he's learned his lesson. From now on, he's gonna use protection.
Yeah,
great. I mean, you know, it's been available the whole time, but sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The pregnancy scare would be the thing that makes you start using protection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When Latanya says it's been available, let's paint a picture, Rob. When they walk into that hotel room for the first time, there is a literal, like, Durex-sponsored display where there is just condoms and instructions to the condoms important. Placed there. Yeah. And they, thrown them into the wind and said, you know what?
Seriously.
Maybe not. Because this is not the only pregnancy scare of the season. So,
well, it's not a real world season without a pregnancy scare.
This place is like the Olympic Village. just everybody is just like, look at all these like free condoms. Blank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Blank.
Throw that away.
Mm-hmm. Blank on my lap.
Blank on my lap.
Yeah.
The sequel.
Okay.
To the Scorned. The Scorned 2. Blank on my lap.
I want to make a Scorned sequel, Rob. I want you to help me.
I don't think we own the rights.
Dang it.
I'm sure we could purchase them for
for $1.95.
Latanya, it'll be the spiritual sequel. We're going to make a movie with all podcasters.
I would love that.
Chappelle's going to be the leading man.
I am the Scorned.
Always the leading man in his own mind. I would relish the opportunity to be able to write a horror classic starring the folk of Rahab.
It's like, it's all podcasters, and we're going to film it on Zoom. Put it all together.
Sounds about right.
That's first, the only first place Zoom that we movie. Can do it.
Yeah.
Listen,
we've done an iPhone.
We've done crazier things on Zoom, honestly. I mean, I was in a wedding one time on this very network, so you know, there's that. But the word classic was definitely thrown out just haphazardly by Tanya. It would be a thing that happened if it happened.
Yeah. So we're doing it.
All right.
Probably all agree.
I'll drop my Venmo in case people want to contribute to the production or what? I don't make movies. I don't know the term.
Okay. Maybe we can get Stephen Hill.
Please.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's try it.
Okay.
Gary.
Trishelle's going to have one more talk with her dad. And dad is not happy.
No.
He says. Disappointed dad.
He says, I don't think you're gay, Trishelle. Don't do it again. Stop doing gay stuff. I hate it when you do that.
Stop doing gay.
Stop doing the gay. Why are you doing that? She's like, Daddy, please. He's like, no. Like,
no.
We didn't raise you like that. Like, sir, calm
we
down.
Didn't raise you to do gay.
Do
stop
the
it.
Gay. Hash on my lap. Don't do the gay on people's laps. Bloink.
The problem is
hashtag bloink.
Normally what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I mean, I think that the real world season itself violated the ethos of Vegas by bringing all these cameras in here.
Yeah. I'm sure that they're going to have like the karma ramifications for breaking such like a sacred and hallowed rule. What do you even do with the rest of your life? It's just like, you know, ceiling fans falling on you and like, your technology not working and such.
Yeah. You know, it's wild because none of these relationships actually, you know, pan out to be, you know, none of these couples stay together. And I wonder if
you're
it has something
me
to do
that the relationship forged on the lap of Frank.
Just from this episode in particular, I actually think somebody does come away meeting somebody on the show that they go on to have a long last relationship. But yeah, these lapluster relationships, if you will, they're not going to make it, and probably because things just didn't stay in Vegas as they should have been. Yeah. It was written.
All right. So this is episode 3 of The Real World Las Vegas. Can we get some highlights of what happens the rest of the season?
I mean, a lot more of this. A lot more, like, there's some sex going on. There's a lot of partying. I think Bryn gets fired from her job because, spoiler alert, she's not great at things like that. She ends up becoming a go-go dancer. They have some, like a touchy-feely boss that they get into a lot of intimate moments with.
What do you mean a touchy-feely boss?
The boss is like a party promoter and like, it's like, hey, let's crazy kids, let's go and have fun. And they're like, we're friends. And then he's like, let's go to the room. And they're like, we're friends. And then he's getting in bed. And he's like, we're friends. And then he starts touching them like, whoa, baby, hold on.
On so, television, on TV, this happened?
On TV. There's a lot of that going on. The word molester gets thrown around a couple times. It ends up like, they tie it up really like, oh, okay, well, maybe he didn't molest anybody, but we should probably be a little bit more professional with our boss, and he should as well be with us more professional. It's a lot more relationships pop up. I think some of these outside couples end up showing up. I know Arissa has an outside boyfriend named Dario who she's been with. Well, I think he gets a girl pregnant. And then you got Irulan's like... Wow. Her open relationship guy shows up and he's upset. So all the things.
That's the first rule of an open relationship. You're not supposed to get upset.
Well,
allegedly. Yeah. But, you know, like Bryn has taught us, jealousy always rears its ugly head. Mm-hmm. It's ugly, unprotected head.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no.
Oh no. I've gone full bloom.
What about the what about the real world reunion? When did they get back? Was that 5 years or 10 years later?
It was only like 5 years later. Mm-hmm. People made it seem like it was the biggest event of the century, and I am people. People is me. because I was like, oh my god, they did it! They came back together. But I think it was only 5 years. So it was like 2002 to 2007, very much the same world. But the way they acted it was totally different. Like Bryn is like, she is a soccer mom. She has no time for partying. She has like three kids or two sons. She's been married to the guy who she met while filming the Real World Las Vegas, you know? So, you know, one relationship did make it out. But yeah, the other people like, Irulan and Arissa, who were like joint at the hip at one point, are no longer even speaking to each other. So they're very much trying to like work out their friendship. I think a lot of that had to deal with Alton as well. Frank's there. And then
Frank,
you know,
continues to exist.
He exists. And so does Steven. I think Steven has like a wife and has had like a new kid or something like that. So it was very much like in 5 years, their whole entire like, this persona is no longer, it doesn't exist for many of them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I wonder what Stephen Hill's up to these days.
Let me deploy the tweet. The weekly RHAP Rewind.
Is he on Twitter?
I'm sure.
Well, I mean, can't imagine he's a big tweeter. Trishel's on Twitter.
Yes, Trishel follows me.
Yeah.
We should. I should DM Trishel and be like, yes. Hey, get Steven on the phone. We got questions.
Get him on the horn.
Yeah. Okay.
Tell him we need to do a Scorn reunion.
Right.
I already have Trishel's contact information. I'm sure if you reach out to the Fishbowl people.
Look, once you say you're doing a Scorn reunion, then you're not going to get any response back.
How dare you?
Well, just call it a remix then.
No remix.
We'll see who has the rights.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm sending the DM.
Soon it will be me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's the real world, Las Vegas. The real world, LV. But let's go back in time. Let's go back to the real world, San Francisco. And I feel like that the real world, Los Angeles, the real world, San Francisco, this was, I think, really like the height of my real world fandom.
This is the best season of the real world. It is not even close.
Yeah.
I am somebody who jumped in 2002 in the real world Las Vegas. But this is the real world as it should be. It is so insightful. It's pure. They're not, you can tell shenanigans are limited here and that they're actually trying to get to know these people and portray them as whole people. Mm-hmm. And so I love the real world San Francisco. I've seen it countless times.
Wow.
Yeah. It's one of my things.
So
who picked this particular episode, episode 8?
I did.
Okay. LaTanya, why this episode out of all the episodes from the season?
I think this episode was a pretty good microcosm of the season as a whole because it showed just kind of like the power of Pedro and his advocacy, as well as we get like a lot of shots of future married couple who is still together, Pam and Judd, there to support Pedro, like through pretty much everything that he does, which is amazing. We get to see Puck being very Puck. Also just because this episode was the one that always stood out in my mind and was a highlight for me when I was younger, because it's the episode that we delve a lot more into Pedro and his status as being an out gay HIV positive man. And they show him doing like lots of interviews and then going to talk to a group of students at Stanford, just about, you know, what it's like to live with HIV AIDS and the kind of like crisis that was happening in the gay community at the time. Though this was more a little bit of the tail end of it because it really started in the 80s, the AIDS crisis, but also just like showed the joy that Pedro lived his life with, and the fact that he was pushing to just be like a normal person in the house and like form relationships with these people, even though, you know, there were people in the house that like didn't agree with him as a person. Also just like really paralleling today, because still we have a lot of issues with the lack of gay rights, you know, that embedded in our like laws in our society, and the AIDS crisis for some nations, especially ones in Africa, has never stopped. It's only more, you know, picked up steam, and it's just, I thought, like, important to show a real change maker, because he literally did change the world, Pedro. He literally like affected immigration policy and the ways that people looked at people who were living with AIDS and HIV.
So I think we may need to set up a little bit of who Pedro is for people who are younger listeners who are checking this out, who may like know like the real world a little bit more from like the modern day real world, but maybe have heard the name Pedro Zamora, but may not know too much about the guy. Chappelle, could you set up a little bit of who Pedro is?
Yeah, so in this season, of course, we're introduced to Pedro, fully formed Pedro. He is an openly gay, HIV positive AIDS educator, right? And so they've brought him into this season because he is such a powerful educator and a powerful speaker, and he's such an interesting person. And he goes on, like LaTanya said, to be the face of the latter part of this movement. His story gets told through his time on The Real World, largely, and through the impact he made with people who watched the season, because this was a very popular show, but also through his castmates who went on to write books and to share his story largely. Pedro is someone who whose name was known throughout the country or in the 90s because he was bigger than The Real World. Like, it happened, he was on the show, but the impact that he has on people moving forward cannot be like understated. Like, it shall not be understated. He was a big deal. He even had a wedding ceremony on the show as well. A commitment ceremony, I'm sorry.
Which
yeah, on the show.
First one ever shown on television. Commitment ceremony between two gay partners.
Exactly. And so we get a lot of Pedro in this season. If there's probably one complaint people might have with The Real World San Francisco is it's very Pedro heavy, but his story is so compelling and he's such a like fully formed character on the show that I don't get tired of watching it. It's such a good moment, and I'm happy that that we got to like see this kind of thing, because if I had not watched The Real World, I probably would have heard about Pedro, but watching it, you really get to appreciate the struggle that people have when they are dealing with HIV and AIDS and like how they are more than just their disease. It's a very much a part of them, but they are so much more. And Pedro famously says, you know, like, I am not dying from AIDS. I am living with AIDS.
Living with AIDS.
Yeah. And that is such a powerful statement to be made in 1993.
And his death ends up coming, I think, is it the day after the season ends, LaTanya? Is that
he died right after the last episode, like episode aired.
Yeah.
So like the same night.
Yeah. My recollection of it was like watching it and then like there being like a card at the end of the show and that he passed away and just being like, oh my God. Because I watched it and I thought I understood what was going on, but I did not think that Pedro was like that. This really was the end of his life that we were that we were looking at. And of course, you know, there's time in between the end of the filming and when it aired. But you know, I did not think that you know it was so severe that he was going to be gone so soon.
Yeah, his T cell count, which we learn about in this episode, was only 32 or 34. Mm-hmm. Anything below 100, as Pam tells us in the confessional, because Pam is a medical student who actually goes on because of Pedro to focus all of her work on HIV and AIDS. So she tells us that, you know, anything lower than 100 people with T cells starts to open people up to all kinds of catastrophic illnesses that lead to the end of their lives. So Pedro happened to be one of the very like unlucky people whose condition just progressed very rapidly and he started to decline very rapidly and to the point where, you know, people on the show were trying to like make up, give excuses for why Pedro wasn't around because he got so ill so quickly.
Yeah, it's very sad. Even watching, you know, him trying to deal with it on the show, like he does acupuncture in this episode just as a way of just like, you know, just trying to put his body at ease because he's dealing with pains that we won't know. And like, unless you go through a situation like that where you have a degenerative disease or something like that, or a terminal illness, like these are things that you see from the outside and you don't understand it. But the way that they film Pedro going through it, it's almost like you can empathize in a way that you couldn't if, you know, you were just like talking to somebody who said, oh, you know, I have this thing about me. And Pedro very much comes in prepared to talk about it because he knows that there's such a stigma behind people with HIV and AIDS at this time that he knows coming in the door, there might be somebody who just refuses to live with him. And he honestly almost has that.
He almost has that. Yeah. He has issues with Rachel throughout the season. Rachel, known as like a young conservative person. They were trying, you know, and Pedro was trying to form more of a bond with her because she was the only other Latinx like person who was on the show. And it, you know, at first it was very hard. And then we have Puck, who was just such an a-hole throughout the entire season.
Like, well, the worst. The worst.
Sucks.
Yeah. He really does. And, you know, so much of the conflict of the season is between Puck and Pedro. And I remember a Puck sticking his fingers in the peanut butter. And sort of like, I remember it being like, roommate issues. But watching this today, what a garbage person Puck is.
I know.
And I found myself like Puck, he was like the bad boy. But I'm like, I'm mad at the producers. Why did you make the last months of this man's life uncomfortable by finding this garbage person? And it's like, let's put him in the house. That'll be hilarious. Great conflict. Puck.
Drag them, Rob. Drag them.
What an asshole.
Yeah. Yes. And he just like, he would make homophobic comments. He teased him about his like Cuban, like his accent. He just generally would interrupt conversations that Pedro would be having about like very sensitive topics with one or two people. And he'd just come in and start talking about whatever just random thing happened to pop into his head that he wanted people to listen to. He even says at one point in this episode, you know, because everybody in the house is supposed to go and see Pedro speak to the kids at Stanford, not just Judd and Pam. And the rest of the group goes out with Puck and his mom, who we meet in this episode, who seems like a completely normal person who just happened
to have a puck. Right,
yeah, who just happened upon a puck. And, you know, he says, I don't need to like have a lecture from Pedro about AIDS. I could probably teach him a thing or two about AIDS. And it's just like that mindset of just toxicity. I did not like Puck. Like, I severely didn't like him. Like, tried to find any positive about him when I was like young and watching this show. But then watching it back, I'm just like actively angry that he is a presence in this house. And he won't be for very long because he's there for long enough, but he gets evicted later in the season.
Yeah.
Because it kind of came a situation of, you know, Pedro or Puck, and obviously people chose Pedro.
Yeah.
Puck
is a mess. You know, Pedro is the star of this season. But like I said, Pedro takes up a lot of airtime, but the other person who takes up a lot of airtime is definitely Puck. It's for two different reasons. Pedro's airtime is very like it's very like triumphant in a way. Like you get to see him overcoming a lot of these obstacles that he just has to deal with because of who he is. And you get to see him having powerful conversations. But then you have Puck, who is like, he's so self-absorbed at this time in his life. I don't know the guy currently, so I won't speak on his like character today. But at 25 years old, he sucked. Yeah. He was just so absorbed.
I'm sure he's a CEO
thing.
Or a
cop. Anyway, so he was so self-absorbed that it was just like, okay, listen, Puck, for one second, can you hear us out? And he just refuses. He just refuses to go there and let anybody talk. So it's not even just a Pedro thing. It's not like Puck has like some like, oh, I hate Pedro because of the, no. Puck sucks all across the board. Everybody hates him and they try to deal with it. It's very fascinating seeing how they deal with it because Pam very much does not have a relationship with Puck at all. She's like, no. I don't have the time.
Yeah,
so I'm in medical school. I don't have the time.
Yeah.
Muhammad does not have a relationship with Puck. They even share a room. He's like, I haven't seen Puck. We barely see Muhammad throughout the season, but he's definitely not with Puck. But then you have Corey and Rachel, who are both younger women who are like kind of fascinated by the bad boy aspect of him in a lot of ways. And they keep going back to Puck. Like he's a jerk to them and they're like, okay, but he's got a softer side. I swear. Like, on
I know
inside,
that, I like him. That like one of the parts of this season that I was just like, come on, that these women were always trying to like take up for him and like, you know, come to his defense when people were like, I'm done with him. They were always like, yeah, no, but we did this together and we got to see. And it's just like, no, he's a garbage human who's likely going to die from the incurable condition of being a little bitch.
It is a thing.
Yeah.
It is a thing.
There is a lengthy legal troubles section on his Wikipedia also.
Of course.
Of many different run-ins of with the law over a number of very poor life choices.
Shocker. Mm-hmm. So the thing with Puck is that, you know, he does have things that matter to him, and he just wants everybody to care about the things that matter to him all the time. But you cannot put a person like that in a room with someone who does have such a like dominating like life experience, right? Like this affects everybody largely because AIDS education and HIV education is important. And so when you talk to Pedro about his life, yes, he's walking around slowly today because he's in pain. Or yes, he's checking his temperature again. Or yes, people are asking how he's doing. People are giving him water and things of that nature. People are giving a lot of attention to Pedro just off the nature of they just want to help him, you know? And so Puck is kind of like, look at me. I have a thing. Like, don't you want to go and like find muscles at Point Inverness? You know? No,
go Puck. Get some abalone.
Yeah.
It's like, We can do those things as well, but Puck is not good at the as well part.
But it was almost like that. Oh, it's like, oh, well, nobody's paying attention to me. Well, what if I just like pick this scab until it bleeds? And then will anybody look at me now? Because I just need attention. Like I feed off of it for anything. Like, yes, we're surrounded by this person who's like an angel on this earth. But look what I'm doing.
Right. Yeah. You know. Listen, there's enough horrible things we can say about Puck because he's horrible throughout this entire season, but very, very much afterlife, it seems, after the season as well. But I know it must be difficult to live in a situation where if you're used to being the center of attention, that you're no longer that and you're thrust into this social experiment or whatever, but there is no grace given by him at all. Like, people can't even have a legitimate conversation with him throughout the season. Even put all the Pedro stuff aside. Like, if I come in the house and I'm like, you know, I think there's a point where Judd goes, he's a cartoonist, and he goes to like this big conference thing or something. He's very excited about it. He's like, oh my gosh, I think they're going to put him in a newspaper. And he flies back in. He's so excited to tell everybody. And Puck just completely comes and just dominates the conversation. And he just pouts. Mm-hmm. Judd just pouts the whole way home because like, oh, I had this thing that happened to me. And Puck wants to talk about the lady who farted on the plane. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the worst. And so there's a lot of that throughout this episode as well. And it's kind of heartbreaking because it's kind of like, this is such a cool story to tell. Like, oh my God, like who gets to experience the things that Pedro is talking about like firsthand? Who gets to say I was in the room for that? And so we have the cameras on Pedro, but we can't focus on it because we got Puck talking about his damn soapbox derby or whatever it is, you know, downhill thing, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It seems like the house is kind of divided also, where Pam and Judd, they're very much on Team Pedro. Rachel seems like a little bit like, ooh, like what's Puck got going on? It seems like that there's a fight for Corey here in this episode where Pedro is saying, Corey, why aren't you, I feel like that we don't really get to hang out anymore. And I guess Muhammad is there.
No, he's not.
No. No, not in the episode.
Yeah.
We assume he's somewhere.
Muhammad had a lot going on. So he was in school. He also was a musician at the time and he had a job. So like Muhammad was very much living the life of like somebody who like does not have time to be on the real world. I think you cast a lot less Muhammads in the future because you don't want them always off doing stuff. Cause you really don't, you wouldn't get a lot of Pam if she wasn't in the health field with Pedro specifically in his incident, because Pam is gone a lot of time too. She like doing, you know, doctor stuff. She does not have time to deal with Puck's madness. And so yeah, we get very little of them in these episodes right here. But yeah, the thing is that Rachel likes Puck. She has a crush on him. Yeah. He's her bad boy thing. She's very rebellious throughout the season. She has a conservative background. She like wants to upset her parents in a lot of ways. She says this, these are not my words, these are hers. She ends up getting a tattoo and a piercing. And even she does the most scandalous thing of all. She brings a gay man with HIV and AIDS to her mother's house. Oh. And they're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen here? It's like, she's like, yeah, mom, get into that. Right. Like, she's like, get into that, mom. I'm such a rebel, you know? So that's why she's kind of got a soft spot for Puck here. She's just like, you guys, I like him a little bit, you know? And so that's why we have to keep dealing with him.
Yeah. And eventually, even Rachel, she turns on Puck, right? That's the last straw.
Not really.
Yeah.
She, She's like a reluctant participant in the vote out. So in a later, I believe it's episode 11, they basically have to do a unanimous decision. Like all six of us have to say that Puck has to leave. And Puck's like, well, Pedro is the one who throws down the gauntlet. Like, it's either me or Puck. And Puck's like, well, bye, Pedro. I don't know where you're going to go, but I ain't going nowhere, baby, unless they vote me out. And, you know, it's such a flex because honestly, they did not want to vote out Puck. But when Pedro, who is, like you said, an angel on earth for, you know, from our point of view and from what they're dealing with, it's like, Puck, you really don't have a leg to stand on here. Like, right. You're going home. You're about to get voted out, like, unanimously here. You know, they cast the e-vote Puck.
and they happily vote Puck.
Yeah, happily. And they do it over the phone, Rob, like on speakerphone, because he's such a jerk, a baby. He won't even come back. Yeah, he won't even come home to be voted out.
Yeah.
And then after that, he calls almost every episode to the point where on the finale or like the second to last episode, he just prank calls them. That's how much attention he wants from them.
And the producers could have fully cut all of this out, but they didn't. So,
Latonya, am I remembering it correctly that I feel like that they follow Puck also, and we still get his story even though he's not in the house.
Even though he's not in the house, they still decided to dedicate time to. I don't know if they thought that there was like a facet of the MTV watching community who was like, "Oh, Puck's a rebel, like
extreme, you
know, yeah, so extreme." Like he listens to the music that they only play at after 9 p.m. You know, so like I don't get the fascination.
No,
I've never gotten the fascination with men like this. I get that, you know, a lot of like anti-hero stories have been written and become very successful. And it's still a weird reason as to why that's the case. Mm-hmm. But the producers could have shut this down. It just so happened that like this was at the very beginning of like Real World before they knew exactly what the show was or could be, and it was so much more intimate as well. Just the shooting style alone was way more intimate in the beginning few seasons. So maybe they thought that, you know, it was necessary to continue to follow this person on their journey and that he might grow and become a better person as a result of getting kicked out of the house. But no, he just continued to be a freaking bellend and like just a terrible person. I just have like a visceral reaction. I had forgotten about how much I dislike this person, and then I was watching this episode and it all just like flooded back, and I was just so angry whenever he came on the screen.
He has redeeming moments sometimes, right? Because his thing is he can't apologize for anything. So he'll go and do something nice for them.
He didn't do anything wrong. Where would you apologize?
Right. So he'll do something like he's a local. So he lives in San Francisco. So it's very easy for his family to come over. So like, and we saw in this episode, he invited them to his mom's house. He introduced them to the grandma. He even brings his grandfather over to the house one time so that he can cook for everybody. Like, you know, a traditional, like, was it? I don't remember what Irish breakfast, something of that nature. It was some like family recipe that Papa comes over and makes for everybody. So he does things to kind of try to redeem himself in a way, but it's just never enough because you can never get him to sit down long enough and kind of hear you out. And so throughout this episode, we see Puck's overall attitude juxtaposed next to like Pedro being an angel. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where they don't stop following him because it's like, I guess he's the villain in the hero story and you need a villain. And so you got it.
Mm-hmm. All right. As far as the actual episode goes, I mean, we see a lot of Pedro's advocacy. We see a protest that happened. This was not an event that I remember of. Randy Schultz died and there was a guy that was protesting the memorial. And I mean, this was wild.
Yeah, all these people came out, you know, because it's San Francisco, just like one of the meccas for like gay people and gay culture, which is fantastic and like still obviously like thriving today. And they, you know, they just go, this is another time when Judd is like able to go and hang out with Pedro, which is great. They, you know, they go to this memorial for like the first writer who like was openly HIV AIDS positive and did a lot of like advocacy, and he passed away from, you know, his condition. And all of these people just like flood out to like ruin this guy's memorial. It was just so surreal to see. But then you start to think about the types of people that we have in America today and like the things that they protest about. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh God, this is just, we've always just been terrible.
this is just normal. This is just every day. This is Tuesday.
Now again. It's just every day when, when there's like some people that are out there protesting about vaccines or like, you know, 9/11 truthers or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, at the time, like capturing this kind of thing on camera, it was also very groundbreaking. Like it was just one of those, this is just one of the all time seasons of any reality TV show or any like TV show. And there's so much like educational value to it as well. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a lot of people would probably never even like know who Randy Schultz was if it weren't for them covering this protest of his memorial on The Real World.
Mm-hmm. I just feel like, you know, Pedro, that he is, you know, we see that he's in a weakened state, that he has 32 T cells and he's doing this exhausting schedule. He's at a mm-hmm. protest. He's flying to Los Angeles. He's going to be on a TV show. He's dealing with Puck in the house. I couldn't believe everything that he's doing. I just want him to take it easy.
Oh yeah, and he gets that a lot. Like they all in the house see it, that he is trying to bury himself with work so that he doesn't have to think about his physical state. Like he's up all night writing things, and he's traveling and flying here and doing TV show, real personal with Bob Berkowitz. You know, like he's doing all the things. Like, and you're like, okay, but are you well? He's right. Like, it's fine. Like, I'm fine. And like, people are constantly checking his temperature, constantly like asking him, trying to convince him to go to the hospital. It's a lot because he wants to live as normal as a life as he can. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want this to slow him down. But at the same time, it very well should slow you down because your body can only take so much. And so it's such a tragic situation to sit through and watch. And then, of course, the Puck of it all.
Yeah. The fact that he felt that he had to do this though, mm-hmm. because he knew that he didn't have much time left. And he needed to be out there just kind of like being as influential as possible. The fact that he was diagnosed when he was in high school is mm-hmm. just like, it always hits me. And he did he graduated early because he wanted to make sure he could graduate from high school before he died. Like everything in his life came with the before I die moniker yeah. mm-hmm. as well. And it, you know, but he's also just like a kind and sweet and joyous person, which I've found, you know, as a young person around the same time, just to be true of the people dealing with this. I remember my mom used to be a nurse, and she was working a rotation in an AIDS ward. And she took me there a couple times just to like meet her patients. And they didn't get a lot of visitors at all because there was, like we talked about, still very much the stigma about HIV and AIDS and people just being very ignorant, thinking that you can catch it from like being around a person who was infected. And so they didn't get a lot of visitors. They were like very, very lonely people on the ward. And so I just spent time with them and like listened to their stories and like tried to relate to them as much as I can, with them being adults and me being a kid. But at the same time, there was still so much joy in that unit. Like so much joy in that world. They were able to find a way to, you know, keep themselves going, even though they were hospitalized in this ward and knew that like a lot of them wouldn't be leaving. And there was like times when I would go back and like someone that I had made a connection with just the time I visited before was gone. So I definitely understood, you know, why Pedro was doing what he was doing. And it really resonated with me because he was just trying to do his level best to get the word out there while he was still had breath and was able to do it. And he didn't have very much time left, as we talked about earlier. So he made an impact on the world in such a short period of time. And this show came along and captured some of it.
It's really powerful to go back to. I've never gone back and watched any of this. And, you know, just to see it for the first time, like, and knowing that he is going to pass away at the end of this, it just, like, really changes the perspective of, you know, what he's going through during the, you know, during the filming of the season. Is there anything today that is like this? That is like, this was like such like if you were between a certain age, like you were seeing this content of like I'm just wondering, is there anything like today that occupies this space?
Yeah. So I feel like now, because we have 1 billion channels and streaming and internet and all that stuff, like you can find like, whether it's documentaries on Netflix or like television series on like TLC, or there's a lot of this stuff is out there. I think you don't find this stuff for this particular age group on a popular television network that is like not even like that on like a normal cable network a lot. So there are shows like Pose that deal with the HIV and AIDS epidemic as well, to where it's like you get to talk about, you get to see that stuff, but that's an HBO show, right? So it's kind of like, is there is there like a like between like channels 1 and 25, like does that exist? Probably not,
right?
But like I like shows like this that are more period pieces, like, so this is real time, right? But you know, like shows like Pose, they take you back and they kind of give you context for a lot of the things that were happening around the same time. And so The Real World does a good job this season of kind of like encapsulating that this moment for what it was, and showing all the different angles of this particular house dealing with this worldview. And it just so happens that Pedro is their window to this whole entire like community and this struggle and this movement that they didn't even know about, or that they weren't completely invested in before they met him. So yeah, it's out there, but you gotta find it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't know if it's marketed to like 25-year-olds.
Yeah, I really feel like that the power of The Real World was because, like we were saying, LaTanya, earlier on, like it was almost like that the stuff that was on MTV, it was like, you know, you just absorbed it. You couldn't miss it. And when these stories got told here, you know, through the prism of these people that we got to know so well, like you couldn't avoid it. Where like now there's just, everything is just so segmented. If you're not looking for that particular content, I think it's almost harder to get a story that might be like Pedro's today.
It is. A lot of times, just because of the very nature of reality television these days, it's a lot of it is focused on conflict, like inherently conflict is like built into the show, and then they try to create it with the casting and go from there. And so this was like pure reality TV, like in its nascent stages, where it really was just like following people around with handheld cameras and like, you know, getting really close and like in there. And so you felt like these people were in your, like literally in your living room with you, which was, I don't think it's something that can be duplicated today necessarily. Mm-hmm. I think that this is something that it was very much like of its time. Like if you were to create a like reality TV time capsule for this like particular generation, then this would definitely be in there.
Yeah, it's just like it's weird. It's like a paradox. Is like, you know, we have like a million influencers that we know like every second of their day, but it's like that we have to be like following those specific people to then be like go down that rabbit hole of where this was just like you know, millions and millions of people watched every episode of the show, and then we just got, you know, so familiar with the stories of like these particular people that who happened to be on this show.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. I think there are people who they go through like health struggles and like body changes and things of that. And they document all of it. It's on YouTube. You can probably follow people's weight loss journeys and things of that nature on YouTube as well. But you got to go looking for it. Right. This was where it was placed in front of people for consumption. And then, like you said, MTV would just play marathons of the Real World. And so there will be days where you probably weren't even looking for this type of content. You just would turn on your TV and it's just there. And so you sit through it and it's compelling television and it touches the lives of people in 1993, 1994, I guess, was when this season came out. But it touches a lot of people in 1994. But like I said, I was 5 years old in 94. I went back and got invested in this season. Yeah. And now I'm able to talk about it, you know, 20, 30 years later with you guys. So it's kind of like, it's one of those things where the story of Pedro lives on because of this season, and we can continue to talk about it, but his work lives on as well. And so You're right. It's not like this anymore, but we do have the footage, and I'm glad that Paramount Plus has released this season in particular.
Yeah. You can go ahead and the whole thing is available on Paramount Plus. Anything else we want to say about the Real World San Francisco?
Lasagna, what you got?
I'm just happy that I got to talk about this. It's a really heavy season. And of course, like I would choose the most like the academic of the seasons. But yeah, just that, you know, advocacy is critical. And it's something that I wish more reality TV shows or TV shows in general would take on to showcase stories like Pedro's and to really just get to the heart of like what in the zeitgeist is wrong with America. And there are so many things to choose from, frankly. But, you know, at this time, you know, this was the issue. And, you know, Pedro has his legacy. They did like the 25th anniversary of his death in 2019, I believe. So like his legacy really has, you know, stood the test of time. Like he on his deathbed talked to then President Clinton and he asked him like, basically, if I could grant you like a wish, like what would you want? And he said that he wanted to be surrounded by his family, but they were still in Cuba and couldn't get to the United States. And as a result of that, you know, people like came together in the government to change immigration policy with Cuba and allow 20,000 people per year in. I'm not sure if that is still something that stands today, especially given what happened with the last one and everything that that the current one is facing with Afghanistan. But, you know, it really is like something that, you know, a person could influence so many people and get into the hearts of so many people, but do it in such a selfless and caring manner even to the point where he was dying and didn't know like who he was because he had toxoplasmosis and brain lesions. So like he still was able to, you know, he was able to live for this particular cause, and the cause has lived on long after his death.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about Pedro a lot, and he is so much to like consume in such a short time. So I will advocate for anybody who wants to watch this. I'm going to go ahead and say that this is the best season of The Real World. And it's not just because of Pedro. The cast is brilliant. Like it's a diverse cast. Pedro is an immigrant from Cuba, but also like we have our first Asian American castmate in Pam, who is in the medical field. We do also have two Latinx people on the same season, and Pedro and Rachel. We got the things that normally start a conflict, right? You got some political stuff that goes back and forth. You got Corey, who's just stepping out on her own for the first time. She wants to experience life. You got a lot of Puck. If you could deal with Puck, you'd be okay. And then you got Muhammad, who's out here. He's a black man trying to do music and stuff like that. He's Muslim. So, you know, for me, there's all the things in this season. It's a, honestly, it's a great season. It's such a happy story. It really is. Now, the fact that it ends with Pedro dying, that's something that Pedro is very upfront with, is going to happen anyway. His story is going to come to an end because of this disease. And that is okay because of the work that he does throughout his time while he's alive, you know? And so we can experience this season, deal with the whole weight of the Pedro situation and still enjoy it. And that's why this is my favorite season of The Real World. And I definitely say, like, Rob, if you haven't gone and watched the whole thing, it's some good stuff in there. So I would say, check it out.
Yeah.
All right, Chappelle, let me get finished with the Survivor binge, okay? Let me get through this, watching a Survivor season a week first.
Yeah, you got it. Because you're almost done.
I'm almost done.
You're so close.
Yeah, I think a fun thing that I like to look for in this season as well is the Judd and Pam of it all, because Judd and Pam are very good friends.
I saw Pam's boyfriend show up at the park in this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Judd made it happen. Judd flew him in. You know, like, Judd is a good guy who likes to date his friends. And so that happens over and over again until it happens between him and Pam. And now they live happily ever after with a couple kids. Yeah. So, yeah, that's fun to watch, too. I'm telling you, it's a good season.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Real World in general?
Nah, check it out. It's a good time. This is one of my stuff.
While you got Paramount Plus to like look at the Big Brother feeds, you know, when those go off, definitely go watch The Real World, because it is the reason for so many other shows that you're enjoying today.
Okay.
Yep.
Latanya, what else are you working on right now?
Right now, not a whole lot in the podcasting world. But I'm hoping to change that. So please feel free to invite me on things. I've started watching reality TV.
Yes.
Again.
My Impact.
Which is Chappelle and Mari's fault. Mm-hmm. So you can like feel free to send all of your messages about my takes. Like if you get angry about something I say, it's Chappelle's fault. DM him.
At Mari talks too much.
So for me, honestly, there are a couple projects that I can't talk about yet.
Whoa.
That are going to be coming along in October. So just kind of like watch this space. And by this space, I mean my Twitter feed, because you literally watch this particular space.
Okay. That's very secretive.
Yeah, hopefully podcasting about Big Brother with you, Rob, is the answer.
Okay. Ooh. All right, we'll do that.
Wonderful.
Okay. All right, Latanya. Great to get to do a podcast here with you. We haven't gotten to do one since Renap.
I know, it's been ages, and it's also been ages since I did a podcast with Knucklehead over here. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, I mean, Chappelle.
Oh yeah, that's me.
Yeah,
I'm Knucklehead. So, he is me.
Yeah, I just like enjoying talking to both of you so much, and I'm really happy that I got a chance to be on today.
Yeah, this is really fun today.
Yeah, we should do this more often.
All right, we'll come up with another show.
Hope not sporadically.
Yeah. Chappelle, what's coming up for you?
Well, every week, Sasha Joseph and I are on Silent Podcast covering the hit Netflix show Never Have I Ever. And so this week we will be doing that again. So if you are a listener or Rob has a podcast, please check out Silent Podcast to listen to Sasha and I.
You shouldn't have made Melissa Denny have to beg to come on the podcast with you.
Oh, I have. No shame in that. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited that she did that. And I'm going to use that as a plug moving forward. Melissa Denny definitely endorses the podcast, so come check it out. She might be a guest in the near future, you guys.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to beg to be on this podcast. Really, Rob, what's coming up for me is just begging to be on podcasts.
It's a thing that Melissa Denny did. Also, I have been just hanging out, Rob, to covering the reality TV Rewind with you, with RJP Rewind. And so, you know, I think next week we are going to talk about some superheroes. I believe the hit reality TV show from 2002, Who Wants to Be a Superhero, is next on our list. So I know you're excited. I know this is your bag. Mm-hmm. And so we have a guest planned as well. I won't announce her yet because we're still trying to work out the scheduling. But she is very excited to talk about it. This was her suggestion. And so I'm eager to get back in the game talking about that with you next week.
Okay. All right. Looking forward to that one next week on the RJP Rewind. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.